The second case for oral argument this morning is Nicole Mundy-Geed, appellant versus the state of South Dakota, appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Timothy Whalen, an attorney from Lake Andes. And for the appellee state, we have Mr. Jeffrey Hallam and Ms. Kelly Marnett, assistant attorney generals from Pierre. Mr. Hallam, I understand you'll be presenting this morning.
Correct, Your Honor.
Very well. Mr. Whalen, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. This case, although it deals with a misdemeanor, is nonetheless extremely important from a standpoint of statutory construction, from a standpoint of what I believe to be constitutional issues. The Constitution of the state of South Dakota permits the courts to interpret laws. It doesn't permit the legislature to interpret the laws. But what the Constitution does permit the legislature to do is to identify the law and set the law forth. Once that is established, then the court can interpret the law and review the law and basically say, this is what the law indicates. Now, in this case, there are three statutes that are at issue, SDCL 3420A93, 3420A94, and 3420A95. In this particular case, the legislature told the courts specifically what its intent was in creating this statutory scheme. In 94, and I'll refer to the statutes by their last two numbers as it's easier. In 94, the legislature specifically said, neither the state nor any county, municipality, charter unit of government, or other political subdivision may interpret or apply any law of general application to circumvent the provisions of 93. And as we know, 93 prohibits the state from enforcing a law that has as an element that a person was under the influence or was intoxicated or was drunk.
Yet at the same time, this legislature did not repeal 3223-1 and, in fact, has strengthened certain aspects of it.
They did, and they did not repeal SDCL 3223-1. What they did do is, by virtue of enacting the repealed statute, which is 95, and which is the statute that basically gives rise to this appeal, they said, in enacting the prohibitive statute, we are going to accept out from that operation the charges or crimes that where a person is under the influence of alcohol, a DUI. And so for that reason, they did not intend, nor did they, by implication or otherwise, repeal 3223-1. What they did do, unfortunately, is in the process, the legislature, in trying to clean up some what they have admitted and what the state has admitted, some other statutes that were unnecessary, they caught in the mix, as the circuit court's decision says, they caught in the mix 95. And when they did that, they created the problem that we're faced with. But the legislature also took away the argument that the states make that there was a repeal by implication of 3223-1. And they did that in 2014 when they repealed 93 and 94. So the argument that there was a legislative intent to repeal or there was an implied repeal of 3223-1 is not appropriate. And the state, by its own actions, remedied that problem. So, correct, 3223-1 is not repealed. And at the time, 93 was still in effect. So was 94. And 94 is the critical statute that we need to look at. Because 94, while the legislature cannot tell the court how to interpret statutes, and it cannot directly say, this is what you will do, court, in fact, that is the court's job, the legislature can give you strong indications and directives as to what its intent was. And 94 is that directive and that intent. Because when we look at 94, it says neither the state nor any of its political subdivisions may interpret or apply any law of general application to circumvent the prescribed statute of 93. So that's telling you, this is our intent. And we don't need to go And we don't need to delve into the extensive history of passing the laws that had to do with alcohol and had to do with treatment and had to do with things of that nature. Because they're telling us our intentions are that the state cannot interpret or argue that these laws of general applications, all the laws dealing with alcohol and treatment, can circumvent the prescriptions of 93. Now, they're not telling you what to do, but they're telling you, here's what our legislative intent was. And if you'll notice, when we brief this, both parties, there is no legislative history. There is no...
Counsel, you're saying that the statutes are ambiguous, and that's why we get to intent to interpret them?
No, sir. I'm saying that the statutes are not ambiguous, and what they are saying is they're clear on their face when we look at them in the trilogy of statutes that were enacted, 93, 94, and 95. When they were enacted, they were not ambiguous and they were straight on their face. 93 says you can't have the crime. 94 says you can't make an argument that the laws of general application defeat 93. And 95 says I'm going to save the DUI. When the legislature got rid of 95, that didn't change the statutory language of 93 and 94. It remained in effect. And so they are not ambiguous. Now, is there a conflict between 3223.1 and 93? Yes, at the time that this case was pending, prior to July 1 of 2014, there most certainly was. But was it ambiguous? No. Was it to the point where we were unable to harmonize those statutes? No. Because in order for the state's argument to prevail, in order for there to be a repeal by implication, or in order for there to be an ambiguity such that the court can then determine and interpret the 93 versus 3223.1, there must be a complete and total ambiguity. There isn't. Under 3223.1, under the prescriptions that are set forth by 93, you still could have a DUI for driving under the influence of marijuana, and you could still have a DUI for driving under the influence of a controlled substance or that combination. So 3223.1 still was in effect. It still was there and viable, and it still was a crime. It's only the alcohol aspect of it was not there anymore.
Did you say that you thought the legislature did this inadvertently? It wasn't their intent to remove alcohol from DUI. Is that what you're saying, was inadvertent?
What I'm saying is that the repeal of 95 was, I believe, inadvertent. I think that was not an intention that they want. I don't think they wanted to repeal 95. I think 95 was to remain in effect, and they inadvertently did it. I agree with the circuit court's language that, and I believe I'll paraphrase the language, the circuit court Judge Anderson indicated that when the legislature was cleaning up some unnecessary statutes, they caught in the mix 95. 95 was never an unnecessary statute. It was never an improper statute. It was necessary.
It was a mistake. They made a mistake.
I believe that they made a mistake.
So isn't there a safety valve in our jurisprudence that says that when legislatures made an obvious mistake to the point where the result would be absurd, that we can make an adjustment for that so that we don't have an absurd result?
No, there isn't. And the reason is, Your Honor, that there is not an authority on this court to modify statutes so they fit. The authority for the court is to interpret the statutes based upon legislative intent. But legislative intent here was to keep, my argument is the legislature intended to keep the trilogy of statutes in one place.
If we look at the entire statutory scheme to determine intent as well, not just the one statute that you're referring to, 93, I believe.
You do look at the entire statutory scheme, but before you can get to that, you have to look at whether or not there's an ambiguity. And my argument is, even though there was a legislative error in repealing 95, that didn't create an ambiguity. It created a conflict between 3223.1 and 93, but that conflict can be resolved without delving into a tremendous amount of legislative analysis. And that... in legislative analysis is only limited to cases where there is an ambiguity in the statutory language. There isn't a statutory ambiguity in the statutory language of 93. It is clear on its face. There never was an ambiguity in 94. It's clear on its face. So what I'm saying is, to answer your question, Justice Konenkamp, no, you cannot have a safety valve in the judiciary to cure legislative mistakes. The cure for that is relegated to the other branch of the government, and that is the legislative branch. When they make a mistake on the law, then it's up to them to cure it. And this is a mistake that they created. So I don't think the court can come in and say, we're going to fix this problem. I don't think that's the court's job in statutory interpretation. In fact, the law on statutory construction, I believe, strictly prohibits that, because we are not permitted to modify statutes so they say what we want them to say or so that they fit. We're only permitted to interpret what the language says, and that's only if there's an ambiguity within that statute. And there is no ambiguity in 93, and there is no ambiguity in 94. So based upon those statutes, we have a clear directive. And I would point out on page 7 of the state or the state's brief, the import. And in fact, they made a very good example of exactly what I'm arguing. On page 7 of their brief, they talk about section 19 of the Uniform Alcoholism and Intoxication Treatment Act. And in that suggested language that the state of South Dakota adopted to get our trilogy of statutes, they indicate that the first statute is that no county may enact a law where the element of the crime is that a person is drunk or under the influence or intoxicated. And then they suggest that no county, municipality, or other political subdivision may interpret or apply the law of general application to circumvent the previous statute. And then they provide the exception statute. And the comment that the state notes is very important and very telling, because they indicate that the states would be expected to repeal all the relevant portions of their criminal statutes under which drunkenness is the gravamen of the offense, with the exception of C. And C is 95. That was the legislative intent. We're going to leave 95 as our catch-all. And the comment from the uniform law says, repeal your other ones, like 22.16.4, I believe it was. There was another statute that was referenced. I may be off on that site. But there were other statutes that were repealed as a result of the uniform law being enacted. But they said, do not repeal C. Do not repeal 95. Leave it in place, because that's your saving statute. And the legislature didn't leave it in place. And as a result of that, we now have the problem that we're facing. Then I would go on to argue, Your Honors, that the people of the state of South Dakota and the people that travel through the state are entitled to know that they should know the law. When you come into South Dakota and you're from Minnesota, you should know that it's against the law to drive under the influence. My client should know that. My client is also, and also people that come into the state of South Dakota, should have the privilege of knowing that if there is a legislative miscue, if there is a problem in the law, and it is a legislative one, it'll be satisfied and corrected by legislative function as opposed to judicial legislation. I think this case presents a case. Unfortunately, the results are going to be somewhat onerous, because if this court reverses, and if this court believes, as I have argued, and dismisses this case on appeal, or I'm strike that, dismisses this case, reverses it, and orders the trial court to dismiss, then we're going to have a large number of cases that are going to be situated in such a position or postured in such a way that they may end up being an administrative nightmare. That's true.
It won't just be DUIs. It'll be vehicular homicides that involved alcohol. It'll be, who knows, commercial pilots, any number of offenses that occurred involving alcohol in South Dakota.
Absolutely. And the court, you're very right, Justice Konenkamp, and that could very likely and quite frankly would probably be the result. But that is not our goal, and that is not our concern. We are not an ends justifies the means court. Our analysis doesn't change by what the result may be. Our analysis has to be focused in on what the legislature did. and more importantly, what they told us in 94. 94, Your Honors, is the key to this case. There's your legislative intent. Because there isn't any, as I started to say earlier, there's absolutely no legislative intent shown by any records. In fact, there were no comments. The state and I both went back and checked the legislative website, and there were virtually no comments about these actions at all. Consequently, do we have a result that would be harsh? Yes, we do. But is it an absurd result? Not if we use the laws that we have to analyze the case. The absurdity deals with the statutes and the intent of the statutes and how the statutes are applied. The absurdity does not go to the result. That is not, I don't believe that that's the law. The absurdity deals with what happens when you look at the statutes. And I think it's important to note as well, Your Honors, the law, the Ellis case cited by the state indicates that the most important rule of statutory construction is to determine and give effect to the intention of the legislature. The Constitution does give you and direct you to interpret the law, but you have established rules, and those rules need to be complied with. And that most important rule is, what did the legislature intend? And 94 tells us exactly what they intended. Now, if we deal with the other aspects of this case, with regard to the general application of the law versus the special application of the law, I don't think there's any issue here that the laws that we're dealing with under all circumstances laws of general application. The DUI is a general application law. The laws regarding the alcoholism and the treatment and that are cited by the state are all laws of general application. We need to comply with what the legislature told us. The legislature told us this is what we want. Now, final comment. Does the repeal in 2014, does that have any bearing on this court's ability to determine the legislative intent or to analyze this case? No, it doesn't. What it does is, the only effect it has is to limit that window of where cases can be dealt with to the two-year period of time. The repeal of 93 and 94 is not to be applied retroactively. At the time this case was pending before the court, those statutes were in effect. 95 was not. Based upon that, Your Honors, I would respectfully request this court to reverse the decision of the trial court and the lower court and remand this case back for dismissal.
Mr. Hallam, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Chief Justice, Justices, and Counsel. The most important rule of statutory construction is to determine the intent and give effect to that intent of the legislature. Defendants' arguments of isolating intent on one statute is contrary to the rules of statutory construction when you look at it as a total, and is also contrary to the obvious intent of the legislature, both in 1974 when the original enactment was done and in 2012 when the repeal of Section 95 and 96 was taking place. This court says as a basic rule of statutory construction is where there's conflicting statutes, and defendant has admitted that there's conflicting statutes. You have the DUI statutes that have alcohol as an offense, and they are a separate statute that deals with that. You have the presumption statutes. You have consumption statutes. You have underage statutes. They are out there, and they conflict with defendant's interpretation of the law. Well, that interpretation of the law, he is assuming that his statute should supersede. You have to look at all the statutes to determine what is legislative intent. And this court has said as a fundamental principle is as you avoid absurd and unreasonable results when you're trying to review statutes that are in conflict. What you first attempt to do is, can you harmonize the statutes and give effect to all of them without implicitly repealing any of them? And the circuit court did that. And we believe that the circuit court was correct. What the circuit court did is say, what was the intent in 1974? That intent was to declare that alcoholism and intoxication should not be treated as a crime, and that there should be a process and procedures for treatment. That was the intent, and it's a clear intent, and it's the intent that defendant has conceded in 1974.
To get rid of the old public intoxication prosecutions?
Exactly. And then also, if you look at the uniform scheme, what it was intended to do also was to prevent government from using things like disorderly conduct because the person was intoxicated, and make that a crime. So that was the intent was going on, and there's no dispute there. Nobody disputes that. Also, there's no dispute in 2012 is the intent of the legislature was to repeal outdated and unnecessary laws. There's no dispute about that. What defendant has conceded is it was an oversight. So the question is then, is what did that oversight do? At the best, it created a conflict between 93 and 94 and all the other statutes that have been on the books dealing with alcohol consumption and intoxication. Some of those passed in the same session. You know, voting while intoxicated was amended, and they have all the elements of intoxication there. They added drugs, but if the legislature intended to do away with the alcohol provisions, it would have shown up there. There was no intent for that. What then is so you have no intent, you have an oversight, and you have statutes conflicting. What this court has said is, let's see if we can harmonize. The circuit court found that you could harmonize. First of all, what was the intent of the 74 legislation to prohibit intoxication being a crime? You can still interpret Section 93 that way. If you look at the express language in 93, that what it says is, except as hereafter provided, without 95, except as hereafter provided, are all the laws to the contrary. Because the legislature cannot bind future legislatures. I don't know why in 1974 they added the state to the uniform law. We wouldn't be here today if they would have left the uniform law in place, but for some reason they put the state in there. But that's, contrary to constitutional laws trying to bind future legislatures, because that in effect placed a limitation on the legislature. But notwithstanding that, that's the law. But you can still harmonize that by saying what was the intent, what was the restriction on the legislature back in 1974 that they were attempting to place on future legislatures and the government enforcing their other laws. It was only public intoxication. And without 95, you can still read 93 that way. It still has application. It's not rendered absurd. It's not resulting in unreasonable result. It also harmonizes all the other provisions. That's why in 2012 the legislature can maintain the alcohol laws, because you can harmonize now. That was not intended, just like in 1974, to affect the DUI laws, the underage consumption laws, the hour laws that the bars are open on it. You can harmonize all those things, and that's what the circuit court proposed, and it is also a primary rule of statutory construction. It's being ignored by defendant's argument. Defendant wants you to solely look at the express language of two statutes, notwithstanding that it makes no sense, notwithstanding that it's clearly contrary to the obvious intent of the legislature. And this court, does not need to put blinders on, as defendant is proposing. You can look.
What about, what's your view of the impact of Section 94 and all this?
Section 94?
Yeah, what's your view? What role does that play in the analysis?
Well, I don't think it trumps this court's duty to interpret the law. And I also, it also ties into 93. So if you read 93 only applying to public intoxication, which I think is a reasonable interpretation, 94 goes no farther. So under those circumstances, is an attempt to circumvent the provisions of 93. Well, you can read 93 as its original intent only to deal with public intoxication. Therefore, you do not offend 94, and the state has not offended 94 by bringing a DUI prosecution. So they harmonize there, Your Honor. You're not removing, you're not repealing by implication the purpose of that section. It remains just like it always was. And then you also don't repeal by implication the DUI laws or prevent the state from going forward and prosecuting the DUI laws, which was clearly in the intent of the legislature when they enacted those laws.
And complete your presentation.
I don't have anything else, Your Honor, unless you have some other questions on it.
Nobody's ever chastised for quitting early.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Whalen, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I view this, my rebuttal comments to start with this statement, and I'm not trying to be glib, I'm trying to be on point. I cotton to the phrase that I don't blame people for their mistakes, but I expect them to live with them. The legislative body made a mistake. They can't come to the court now and say, fix our blunder. It is not proper. In this case, Justice Konenkamp asked and pointed out a question about the result that could come from this. We talked about that earlier. Mr. Hallam talked about the consequences and what had occurred with other statutes that had been repealed. The vehicular homicide statute. If that statute's affected by this, then the state has a fallback position, second-degree manslaughter. Doesn't require any consumption of alcohol. I know, and the state knows, that there also are charges that can be made. Whether or not they'll be successful is probably something we're going to argue to you in another several months about potential for first-degree manslaughter. Those charges have been made, and this court's well aware of those cases where they have affirmed, this court has affirmed charges stemming from a person operating a vehicle where one of the aspects was operating it under the influence. And they were convicted of first-degree manslaughter. So there are avenues. There are other statutes where the courts and that can be used to harmonize a decision made by this court to eliminate the effect of a DUI. So there is a basis for it. The harmonizing aspect is not gone. The statutes, contrary to what the trial court argued or stated in its decision, there is no strenuous stretch that we have to engage in order to try to harmonize the existence of 93 and 3223.1. It's very simple. The statutes do not eliminate 3223.1. The alcohol aspect is directly affected, and it is eliminated. That is a consequence. Are they harmonized? Yes. Does the harmony have to be pleasant? No, it doesn't. We don't have to harmonize so that everybody's happy. But there has to be some way of harmonizing, and we can do that. And this court can meet that burden, and it can harmonize those statutes.
Can I ask a question? I'm just curious. How did you find this mistake? I mean, I think you're the only lawyer in the state that found this mistake and has brought this to the court's attention.
Actually, no. There was a gentleman, a lawyer out in Rapid City that found it, and I heard it through the grapevine.
Oh.
So it wasn't me. I wish it was. I wish I could say I was brilliant and novel and researched.
I was going to tell you, I mean, this is really great lawyering. I mean, I think you, whoever discovered this is a darn good lawyer. This and you're fulfilling the great tradition of the law by bringing this to us, you know. And it's good lawyering. Now, whether it's good judging for us to agree with you, that remains to be seen. You know?
And, you know, I agree, and I thank you for the comments, and I wish I could say it was me that discovered it, but it wasn't. It was something I heard, and once I heard it, then I looked at the statutes. And it's been the product of a lot of discussion and consternation and consideration in the bar down in Charles Mix County. And I think that the fact that it is something that is serious and I don't take it lightly and I don't believe the court does. This is there are serious consequences and it is something very serious because I think we can look at it from another aspect, an aspect that I did not raise in my brief, but I certainly think it's something that I should mention. As we know, jurisdiction can be challenged at any time. I think we also need to look at this statute and the problem created by the legislature as to whether or not and how it affects jurisdiction. And if this is a jurisdictional question, and I do believe that there are aspects of it that are jurisdictional in the sense that if the state never had the authority to enforce, as 93 says, if the state never had the ability to enforce the law from the begin with, then DUIs and the convictions that occurred were void ab initio. That is, they were not proper to begin with. So now we have a constitutional issue that I haven't argued, but I certainly think it follows necessary with the jurisdictional question, and that is, were the courts allowed to act and accept guilty pleas? Were their factual basis of the court appropriate?
Well, you brought us the statutory construction claim. Mr. Hallam can't rebut this. I think it's not fair rebuttal.
All right. Okay. The only thing that I conclude with then and from my comments is that I think that with regard to the accept as here and after comment that Mr. Hallam argued, and which is stated in, I believe, in 93, the opening language in 93, that referred to 95. And that was the intent when the statute was enacted. Now, Mr. Hallam argued that the legislative intent in 74 was as indicated in their brief, and that the trilogy of statutes was as indicated. And except as here and after did, I think, refer to 95. Now, the legislative intent cannot be changed after the statute's been in effect for all these years. We can't now come to the court and say, well, back in 74, here was our legislative intent. But now that we inadvertently repealed 95, we've changed our mind and our legislative intent is now different. I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think the law supports that argument. And I don't think that the rules of statutory construction permit that. So legislative intent is what it was when the statutes were created, and that's clear. And I think that's where we have to argue this case, and I think that's where we have to analyze the case from there.
But how do you get over the fact that, I mean, it's clear from the title of the 74 Act that it was only intended to decriminalize public intoxication and that type of thing. It was never, the 74 Act was never intended to affect DUIs.
I would respectfully disagree with you, Justice Inter, and this is why. The 74 Act created 93. The 74 Act also created 95. If 93 was never intended to apply to DUIs, there would have been no reason to enact 95.
Maybe they wanted to make sure. Maybe they wanted to make sure that there wasn't any mistake.
And I think, Justice, you answered the question best. We're speculating. And I don't think we can say maybe this is what the legislature wanted. I think we have to be sure. We have to look at it and not say what we think the statute should say or what we think they wanted us to say or what we think they meant. We have to know from evidence and from statutory language. The title is not in and of itself sufficient basis for a determination of legislative intent. The statutory language supersedes the title. And I think it's very clear from the statutory language that 93 was intended to prohibit DUIs. Otherwise, there would have been a useless effort to enact 95. So 95 clearly was the statute that saved the DUIs. Once it was eliminated, there was no more saving of the DUIs. If there are no further questions, that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Whalen. The court will be in recess until 11 o'clock.